concerned with hoo-la. You don't know how you're supposed to earn it, or what to do with it, or how to keep it. You're a freak with a dark, shameful secret. But you're not the only one. Get your hidden financial fears with a blast of sun. Now your healing has begun. It's Bad with Money with Gabby Dunn.
Hello, and welcome to this week's Bad with Money mailbag episode. I'm Gabby Dunn. This week, I am joined by our new semi-co-host, Mal Blum, to react and respond to your messages and emails. Let's get into it. Hello, Mal.
Hello, everybody.
Are you trying to show that you're in a better mood because the last two mailbags you were depressed?
Yeah, here's the thing is the mailbags, you know, we record them a little in advance. So, you know, I've been out of my depressive episode for at least a week. But in Bad with Money land, I'm still right there. So
someone wrote in the Facebook, I feel Mal's energy deeply in the mailbags.
Yeah.
So you're relatable.
So did you.
The people really, I know I felt it in my own home. the people really like you. They find Aww. You a very good addition.
Thank God, because if even one person disliked me, this whole thing would crumble.
Okay.
Let's get into it.
Good me impression. On today's episode, I'm going to read an email from Sandy about APR cards, an email from Eva about their adoration for our boring episode, one from Jacob saying much the same, Kay's ideas for ADHD budgeting. We also got a couple other messages about ADHD budgeting, and Katie's thoughts on prenups. In the second half of the show, I'm going to read three Apple reviews, welcome a new patron, read BB's follow-up about skepticism about IRAs and how his friend group roasted him about it, a Facebook response from Joanna to that, Fi's concern about word use on the show, and Hannah's desire for us to debunk a TikTok about insurance being for the rich. I love to debunk TikToks. Okay, so here's an email from Sandy.
Oh my God, Sandy.
Sandy. Oh, she probably gets that all the time. Sandy, baby. Okay, possible episode idea.
Oh my God, I'm just kidding.
You are so fired. Can I just say that your computer went to like screensaver once and it's all pictures from Grease 2.
I'm really embarrassed that you saw that.
I did see that. And I didn't even ask any questions. I just went, okay.
It's actually, you want to know, this is an incredibly ADHD thing. I was like, I'm going to make my screensaver all like heartthrobs. And so it's a picture of Michelle Pfeiffer and what's his name from Grease 2?
Mm-hmm.
Rex Manning, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dopamine just ran out. I don't know what happened, but I just never put any more pictures in it. So it's just those two pictures over and over.
From Grease 2. Yeah, I saw and I said, all right, not enough Maxwell. Time to unpack that today. Yeah. Okay. Hi, Gabby and maybe Mal. Possible episode idea. I would love to learn more about medical credit cards and the upsides, downsides of 0% APR credit card options. I was surprised this wasn't mentioned by any listeners during your pet insurance episode. I pay for vet costs and personal dental costs through a care credit card, which allows me to make 0% interest payments over a 6-month long period. Longer periods also available. Some catches include... The charge must be over $200. If I don't pay the full balance within 6 months, the interest is huge and is applied to every cent financed from the initial charge. Not all providers accept the card, so you should definitely check first. I find that this system works well for me since I only use the card a few times per year and am able to pay off the full amount before the interest hits. If your health provider offers a payment plan directly, this may be a better option, but mine do not. I would love to hear more about the pros and cons of this type of payment option from experts. Sandy. I have actually used a care credit card. I used it for when I got my gums. My gums had receded and I got more gum put on them. And I used a care credit card for, that's the medical term. And I used a care credit card for that. And I actually found it incredibly useful. So yeah, maybe that is something we should talk about. And I haven't really shared my experience with the care credit card either. I don't know why I haven't. Maybe I felt embarrassed a little bit about it, but I don't know. Now hearing you talk about it, it seems pretty reasonable. And I don't know why I felt ashamed at all.
Because we're meant to feel ashamed. because they they make us pay for care that should be free and provided by the government, and then they shame us if we can't pay for it all at once. This is So dystopian.
Yeah. And there's a full like credit card system just for that, which is fascinating. I've actually also seen at our dog's vet, they have that option. There's like a thing that says like, if you can't pay for your services today, and then it shows you the option for care credit.
I've come into this with like contractors working, because now that we have a house, like sometimes, for example, this is extremely boring, but like the logs on our cabin are painted and you have to like sand them off because they'll rot because you can't have paint mm-hmm. on log. Anyway, and I was like talking to one guy about sandblasting it, and he quoted me something that was like exorbitantly expensive mm-hmm. that is way out of the range of what it should have been given other estimates that I got. And I was trying to be polite, and I was like, yeah, that's just a little out of our budget. I think we're going to go with this other person or whatever. And he was like, oh, well, like, you know, you want finance options? And it's like, no, motherfucker. I don't want finance options. Like sometimes I feel like they offer these like finance options when it's just like, it should be less expensive. No, that's not. Oh, having me pay this exorbitant price over 5 years of my life is not a solution.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, I thought you were going to say he shamed you. I thought you were going to say that he was like, OK, get less good work done. See you later.
He did also say that. Yeah. But it is an interesting financial story if you would like to revisit it at any point.
OK, here is a response again from BB. Hey again. Absolutely loved hearing you bring up my concern about maxing out your IRA on the most recent episode, and thrilled to hear her say I was right. Someone responded and said that BB was right. If you're looking to make a large purchase like a down payment on a house or grad school tuition, it's best to keep that extra $6,000 in your savings for short-term use. However, I shared my victory with some friends, and it started a heated debate that resulted in the group still calling me crazy. here at Bad With Money, we're breaking up friend groups. Ultimately, I learned a few things. Not everyone is as obsessed with buying real estate as I am. Not everyone has as many short-term goals as I do. I don't plan to contribute to my IRA in the near future because I need money for home repairs, which my renting friends don't have to worry about. And because I'm a listener of this podcast, I don't really trust the government / inflation / health insurance / climate change, and find it hard to believe I'll benefit from an IRA savings when I'm 65, instead of using that money in the meantime to buy a house in a part of the country that isn't on fire in 20 years. Call me a skeptic, but at the end of the day, I want my cash liquid, whether that's for emergencies or short-term real estate investing. I think investing in Southern California real estate can beat the traditional stock market, and I could be entirely wrong, but we'll see. My older relatives who bought homes decades ago are doing better than those who rented their whole lives, so I've decided home buying is my chosen form of saving for retirement. So are IRAs a scam? No, not if you're a set-it-and-forget-it type of investor. It's great for most Americans, but I'm choosing to take a much more potentially risky, specific, and active role in planning out the next few decades of my life, and that's okay too. Thanks for all the years of your enlightening podcast, BB.
To quote Tony Soprano, you should buy land because God's not making any more of it.
He literally said that on last night's episodes. We are deep in The Sopranos, by the way. I don't know if you guys thought we were on the pulse of anything, but we are so not on the pulse. We are deep into The Sopranos here, the year of our Lord 2022.
It's incredibly irrelevant.
It's so relevant. But anyway, yeah.
Like most things, I don't think it's a black and white issue. I think there's a gray here. If you're going to pay it in taxes anyway, you can't put it into a savings account. Because the federal right. government wants it.
Like, I view this house that we live in as an investment. I was delighted to hear that, you know, the upgrades to the neighborhood and to our house have possibly made this house more expensive rather than less expensive.
I will not sell this house. And if you leave me, I will take it from you.
That's fine. I think we agreed
kidding.
To that
oh,
anyway.
Oh, God. We're going to get a text from your mom. She listens to this podcast.
No.
Karen, I'm kidding.
Yeah, mom, Mal's kidding. A big thing is that if you buy a house with someone, have everything in writing. And we did do that.
Yeah. And the writing says Mal can do whatever they want. And I love them so much that if they don't want me to sell the house, I won't. And I'll just give it to them. And if I leave them for, I assume, a younger and stocky trans.
What are you going to say? A younger stocky trans man?
Trans masculine. Jewish. You know, model, a younger model. If I leave them for a younger model, they can keep the cabin and cry their eyes out into the woods.
We just got engaged.
Yeah, I know. Listen, you wrote the agreement. I thought it was weird that you put all that stuff in it.
Stop it. All right. We do actually have an agreement. It doesn't mention other stocky, good-looking trans men. But a side note, we did just get engaged. We talked about it a little bit, but we haven't talked about it on a full episode or anything. But Mal and I are engaged. We're getting married. So we're going to talk probably more on a later episode about our wedding plans. But anyway, okay. Joanna had some thoughts about this as well. Joanna, I would love to add a little nuance to a few topics on today's episode. And this is the boring episode, quote unquote boring episode. But oh my God, please, please fact check me because I literally had surgery today. So I have anesthesia brain. No fact check. We don't fact check here. One, I think you can put up to $10,000 from an IRA or 401k, 403b to a down payment of a first home purchase. Potentially, they may have to be Roth flavors of these funds. I'm not positive. Two, if you are investing in Roth flavors of funds, you can take out money from those accounts before you are 59 and a half years old, but only capital you put in, not any of the money made in the account. Yes, I think that's right. Three, the level of HSA utilization talked about was varsity level stuff. An easier and more practical way to use it is if you have a high deductible health insurance plan is to set aside money you know you will need to use regularly. For example, my therapy sessions cost $120 per session. I have my HSA take out $120 from every paycheck, and I just know I paid for my therapy with money I didn't need to pay taxes on. The biggest money-making strategies HSA holders talk about doing takes more money and more time planning than the average person has. Four, in general, the goal with taxes is to break even with the government. A lot of people want to see big tax returns, but you aren't using your money wisely in that case, because the more time the extra money spends in the government's hands, the less time it's in your accounts with the ability to grow. Personally, love this boring episode. This eat your veggies approach is something that younger millennials, me, and Gen Z should be thinking about more. The more time you put money in these get rich slow mutual funds, the more money you will have later. Thank you, Joanna. Yeah, that was just good advice. In fact, let's talk a little bit more about the boring episode too, because I thought it was going to be incredibly boring and nobody would like it. It was our episode with Stephanie Lee, who's a listener, begged me to cover these topics, and so I invited her on the show. That's what I titled the episode, because it's true. And then we got such a good response to it. So here is an email from Eva. Hi, Gabby and Mal. First, I loved the episode with tax expert Stephanie Lee. It was great and not boring at all. She explained fundamental and complicated concepts really well and in a way that was easy to follow. I'm one of your listeners who leans towards safe investments and therefore enjoyed what she had to say. Plus, I learned a lot. Also, always great to find ways to maximize whatever benefits the government offers. Just think of how much the Jeff Bezoses and Trumps of this world save from taxes. So if there are loopholes, let me know. Second, I have to disagree with you and Jess, who wrote about her cat and the vet asking how they wanted to proceed with his body after putting him down. I mean, no disrespect by this, and I understand that having to put down your pet is an awful, awful, and very emotionally charged situation. Been there, done that, still not ready to get another dog after having let go of the goodest boy last year. Sammy was the best. Oh, I'm so sorry. However, I think it's the owner's responsibility to consider how to go about the nearing death of a pet. In fact, I think it makes sense to think about this scenario regardless of your pet's age and health. Horrible things can happen every day that might force you to have your pet cross the rainbow bridge. Sorry to be Debbie Downer. I don't think the vet's question about whether they want to bury the cat themselves or have him cremated with other pets versus alone was manipulative, or that he was required to provide information on the cost. As a pet owner, you should consider and research the options before putting your pet down. Of course, price is an important factor, and it would have been nice for the vet to give some context. Still, nothing stops you from researching the prices, asking the vet, or even asking a friend or loved one to call them and give your quotes even after putting the pet down. Usually, they don't get picked up till the end of the day or early next morning. I know that's the last thing you want to think of in a situation like this, but I don't believe blaming the vet or putting this responsibility on them is right. Also, from what I understand, the vet usually doesn't make any money with the cremation of animals unless it's something they do in-house. When it became clear Sammy would have to be put down, our vet informed us about which cremation company they usually use and directed us to the company's website to see prices, options, etc. They also told us we could use whatever other company and asked us to inform them so they could plan accordingly. So I don't think it would even make sense for the vet to direct you towards cremating your pet unless they cremate them in-house or receive a bonus if you choose this service, which I really, really hope they do not. Okay, this got really long. No disrespect intended. Thanks for reading. Feel free to read as much or as little as you want on the podcast. All the best and cuddles to beans, Eva. P.S. Love the pod. Have been watching, listening to you since BuzzFeed, and your podcast taught me so much. Thanks for all that you do. Okay, now I just want to push back for a second because your vet gave you the number of the cremation company, gave you the website so you could look and see the prices. Jess's vet didn't do that. So you're like, well, the vet is under no obligation, but your vet sent you to where you can see the prices.
Hold on. I guess I'm very malleable, no pun intended. Because, okay, Jess was the person who wrote in last week. Because I was like, yeah, the vet should have told you. But now listening to this letter, I'm imagining how that conversation would go. And I realize now, like, imagine for a moment. Okay.
Yeah.
We have to put our pet down or whatever. And the vet's like, I'm so sorry. I know this is a delicate time. Do you want to take your pet's body home? Would you like some cremation options? Like, what would you like to do? This is what people usually do. Yeah. That'll be $99.99, baby.
Okay, I don't think he has to do it like that. But I'm just saying, directing them to the website where the prices are. Eva, I don't mean to call your bluff.
No, Eva didn't say the prices were there.
But your vet did that for you. No, yes, Eva, they did. They said the prices were there.
But I think the vet was just like, here's the name of the place we usually use.
Company's website to see prices. To see prices. Yeah. Justice for Jess.
There's got to be, you know what? This is where they need a pamphlet. So the vet could be like, here are some options. It's like an I'm sorry for your loss options pamphlet. You know what? It should be like pets should have to pay for and plan their own funerals like people do. Oh,
yeah,
I
agree.
I guess family does that for people.
Family members do it. So it really is us again.
Not everyone, though. Dita planned her own.
Dita, our neighbor who passed away, planned her own. That is true.
Well,
I mean, but she didn't even have a funeral.
That's what I mean. She paid for her cremation
her
in
mortuary.
Advance. So anyway, okay. I think the pets should have to pay for it in advance.
Yeah. And honestly, pets should get jobs. Some pets have jobs. Why
more
not ours?
Pet jobs.
More pet jobs. Beans, honestly, he could deliver mail. Why isn't he doing it? Anyway.
I don't know. He pays rent, so he should.
Yeah. I pay his rent.
Yeah.
Ugh. Okay. This is an email from Jacob about the boring episode. Dear Gabby, and not Mal. Suck it, Mal. Okay, dear Gabby. First, let me say that I really enjoyed the show. And I, for one, really appreciated the boring episode that aired on July 20th. IRAs, HSAs, FSAs are decidedly not very exciting topics, but knowing about how these things work is so important. There's a lot of psychology here that I think is very important for people to recognize. Most of these boring investments are boring because they basically demand that we don't actively do anything. All you do is automatically send part of your paycheck to your account, and then you do nothing at all. But wait, shouldn't we have to, like, do something in order to get better returns or something like that? Well, as your guest pointed out, you can try to be an active trader, but more than 97% of the time, you would have been better off doing the boring thing. When you're doing stuff and making money, it feels really good. You feel like a genius. Never mind that you could have made more money by just buying an index fund and sitting on your hands. And oh, there are so many people out there who want to convince you that doing stuff is really the way to go. Oh, and by the way, pay those people to tell you what stuff you need to be doing. No. In the end, we'd all be better off just learning more about these boring topics. You know, the ones that the government gives you actual tax breaks to do. Smiley face. Not that I necessarily want more boring episodes, and then a laughing emoji, but just wanted to let you know I appreciated this one. Best, Jacob from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Oklahoma? Whoa, crazy. He mentions July 20th, which is when we got engaged, and he's from Oklahoma, which is where we got engaged. Whoa.
It's the whale. The whale wrote in.
The synchronicity.
Synced up in the drift. Yeah, you know what it is like, it's like gambling, right? It's like this dopamine rush.
Oh, it is.
You know, when you're like gaming the system, but actually you are just in the system and house always wins, baby.
Is that what, how did you learn that?
That the house always wins? By losing at gambling.
Yeah.
You ever lose at gambling? You play, because you play long enough, the house always wins. Because the thing is, when you're up, you got to walk away. But that's when your brain is like, dopamine, another one. Anyway, I imagine that's what most feel like, playing stocks.
Yeah, it is. It's very...
Playing stocks.
This is a show where we know a lot, guys. And so playing stocks, that's just what the insiders call it, baby. I've learned some. And that's the bad with money tagline. I've learned some.
I don't care. And you know some.
Yeah. Mal's a radical with just enough information. And I've learned some. Here we are.
Do I know stuff? No. Do I have strong opinions? Yes. Are they informed? Probably not. Just kidding.
Yeah. Mine are lightly informed.
Yeah.
So, yes, Jacob, thank you so much for this email. I think that's exactly the response I wanted from this episode. And I think Stephanie did a great job explaining stuff. As I said in her episode, you're not fun, but you are right. So anyway, okay, this is a light email from Phi. Word choice follow up. Hey, Gabby, I sent you an email a few weeks ago and I've listened to that mailbag episode, but I heard you say you were going to identify yourself as bipolaroid, and I just want to let you know it's a made up word that I use because it makes me laugh at an otherwise serious illness. Feel free to if you like. I just use it because it brings a bit of levity to what could otherwise be a pretty hellish condition. I get mortified from mistakenly using the wrong word, which is why this has weighed on me. I'm glad the way I put the difference in your growth meant so much to you. Thanks, Phi. This person is bipolar and called herself a bipolar. Polaroid, and I thought that was so funny and cute, and I didn't know that that was a thing. And then this person is writing in saying that it's actually not a thing, that it's something that they made up.
Let me ask you this. Is it somebody who has bipolar and feels like an android, or is it somebody who has bipolar and likes to take pictures?
It's both.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I just thought it was, I think it was like, instead of saying someone with bipolar disorder, it was like a cheeky sort of like, I'm a bipolaroid.
Yes. Like a photo of one or an android of one.
Now, like what you call yourself, like a team name, like the New Jersey Bipolaroids.
The New Jersey.
I have bipolar disorder. I just want to say I have bipolar too. That's why this came up. I'm not making fun at all. I'm laughing so I don't cry. And then I laugh while I cry. You ever been bipolar? Okay, we did it. Okay, here is an email from Hannah. Hi, Gabby. I was curious if you could do an episode about life insurance and the claims I keep seeing on TikTok. It seems like this last year, I keep seeing people all over TikTok talking about how the wealthy have been using life insurance to take out loans, cash accumulation policies, can be accessed and used anytime, can be used as a no-interest loan, etc. I'm skeptical because so many TikTokers are talking about it right now. I don't understand jack shit about life insurance, so I wondered if you could do a debunking or explaining episode. Even an intro to what the fuck life insurance is would be great. How can I use life insurance to my financial benefit? What types of policies are available? How do rich people use the benefits? What should I be looking out for in my policy? I'd link some TikToks, but honestly, just search life insurance on TikTok to get a sampling of some of the claims being made. Love your show and hope you get to cover this soon, Hannah.
Yeah, that makes sense because one time, I've told you this before, but maybe like 10 years ago or something, I was sitting in my parents' living room and my dad came out. I feel like he came out to ask me for my birthday, but he knows my birthday. And I was like, why? And he was like, because I'm taking out life insurance on you. And I was like, oh, for real? And he was like, yeah, sign this thing. And I was like, okay. And I did not ask any other questions.
You think he's been making money off of you?
I don't think so. Like,
is your dad going to murder you?
I think he would have already.
Maybe he's letting it accumulate.
He was like, no, no, no. Eventually you'll get it. And I was like, really? But like, I haven't heard anything else about it. I don't know if he's been paying or like what. But I'm more worried. Yeah, we should do an episode because I'm more alarmed that like, I was just like, sure, take out a life insurance policy on me. I didn't ask any other question.
We'll do an episode called Is Mal's Dad Planning to Kill Mal? And we'll figure all of this out for you, Hannah.
Oh, no.
All the signs were leading to it. You're like, he did take me out on a boat alone with cement blocks. Was that weird?
Nah, he would have. This is dark, but if he was going to kill me, he would have killed me already. There were many opportunities for it, you know?
Wow. Okay, Hannah, I'm going to look into that and I'll have some more information for you soon, I promise. And if anyone else knows what Hannah's talking about, please write in. Okay, this is from Anonymous. Hi, Gabby. Have you ever done an episode on the actual financial and legal consequences of marriage and prenups, not weddings? I did a search through the archives in my podcast app and re-listened to a few episodes, but I haven't found anything that addresses this specifically. I appreciate your research. If you haven't, I'd like to suggest it as an episode topic, perhaps with a family attorney as a guest. I ask because I recently got engaged to my partner of many, many years. We're both in our 30s and have lived together for a decade. So I'm trying to figure out what would actually change for us financially and legally when we sign that paper. I'm also trying to figure out how we can go into this with eyes open and in a way that we can protect each other. We both have debt we're paying off and some assets, like the home we live in that's solely in my name and our dog. We're very much not rich. And truth be told, we're at different places in our relationship with money and our financial journeys. I've seen a few things recently that argue prenups aren't just for rich people protecting their assets.
No.
One point is if you don't get a prenup, your state's laws are your de facto prenup. The second is that many people are now using prenups to protect their spouses from their own debt, including medical debt, in the event of their death. Very intriguing ideas. Problem is, I'm having a hell of a time figuring out how to start thinking through what I might want to include and what the consequences would be of different decisions in different scenarios. Hell, I'd love a worksheet with examples of different things people typically include with explanations like, if you choose this, here's how it could work for and against you and your spouse in good scenario A and bad scenario B. Obviously, we'd need a lawyer for all of this, but I want to do some research before we get to that step, or before I broach the subject with my partner, given the way society sees prenups. So many people say everyone should protect themselves with a prenup, but no one says how to write one to do that, or even what needs protecting, and how different people might want different agreements. But really, that could be its own rant about so many things in life that you've covered on the podcast. And also, it's so frustrating that there's so much out there about wedding planning and the cost of that, and almost nothing about marriage planning, when the wedding is just a one-time party and the marriage is meant to last much longer. Thank you for reading and considering, Anonymous.
We should do a whole prenup episode because we're gonna
because this person didn't even realize that you and I are engaged, that we are gonna need a prenup.
As your mother is a divorce lawyer.
And my mother
and would never let you get married without a prenup.
Attorney.
And in fact, offered to make a prenup for your ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, not for me and him to get married, for him and his wife.
Yes. So there is no world where we get married without a prenup. But we should meet with we could do a whole episode maybe if you want to like meet with or interview a lawyer about whatever. And then we
Well, I don't think our lawyer can be my mom because I don't think that's fair.
And also because I absolutely not. What do you mean you don't think she can be your mom? It's not even ethical.
Yeah, the lawyer can't be my mom.
For so many reasons.
It's unethical. But yeah, like we will need a prenup. It's so funny that you wrote in this email, Anonymous, because we are going to need to be doing that. And those episodes are forthcoming. Believe you me.
Yeah. Should we maybe like interview a lawyer and then like for the podcast and then we don't have to let people know in our actual prenup, or do we?
I don't know. I think we could have the lawyer on and you and I could talk through what we actually want, which is I want to protect you from medical stuff for me. I also, you know, want to make sure that you're protected in a lot of ways. I don't think I would ever do this, but you have a large catalog of music and work, and I've heard horror stories about people who get divorced and try to like own their partner's work. Like, no.
First of all, you can't even, I don't even think you could do that with, what are you going to take one of my albums? That doesn't even translate to music. But I will sign something saying that I have no right to your intellectual property, which is more likely what happens in Hollywood.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, you and I should definitely do that episode because it's extremely relevant now, Anonymous.
I've become accustomed to a certain lifestyle. And when you leave me for a shorter, younger trans mask.
Wow.
You know what's funny about this that scenario is like, it doesn't even work like with non-monogamy. Like you already are dating like a shorter, younger trans mask. I don't know why shorter is part of it, but I like made that aspirational in the same way that younger is aspirational. But
I am also dating a younger model. Man.
I was like, he's not a model. He's not a model. I'm a model.
You're a model. I'm saying a younger model of man.
I know. Am I a man? I don't even know.
Yeah, a younger trans mask. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why you can't have like infidelity clauses. This is the big thing. So from this email, I want to say my mom always says, if you don't have a prenup, you actually do have a prenup and it's your state's laws. So by not having a prenup, you have a prenup and it's not one that you want. That's what she always says.
We don't have to make one.
No, it's not one that we want. Okay. This is from the Discord. Lore wrote, this is about someone who was told that they were about to be fired. So this is the response. Lore, A friend of mine got laid off less than 2 weeks after she got the job. They claimed sales were lower than expected and couldn't afford to keep her anymore. Huh. That sounds illegal and bullshit, right? Also, we are in Alberta, Canada. I've been trying to look for laws and regulations, but I can't really decipher what I'm seeing. This happened last week. P.S. Gabby, if you read this on the show, feel free to say my name. That sucks. I don't know.
I think you're allowed to do that in Canada.
Is that, are you just making that up?
Yeah, I'm making that up. I don't know.
Okay, great. In next week's mailbag, we have someone who wrote in with really a lot of advice about if you think you're about to be fired. So stay tuned for that, because that person wrote in with some really good advice. Okay, so this is from a listener in the Discord. Read the eradicating landlords debate. Realistically, I think there will probably always be a need for some rentals, temporary residences, college students, people with physical disabilities, etc. But think housing co-ops are an underutilized alternative. Co-ops provide the conveniences of renting while giving ownership stake. Instead of owning your individual unit like a condo, you're a shareholder in the cooperative based on unit size. Usually co-ops have maintenance just like an apartment would, and it's easier to transfer ownership. One reason they aren't super common is the law makes it difficult to set them up. I also think there needs to be bans or a ban on investors buying single family homes.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, definitely. And then this person added, another person added, the most ethical way to be a landlord may be to have your rentals be subsidized housing. That way you're really helping someone in need and not someone who is likely just unable to get a mortgage because the system is broken and landlords are greedy. You also have the added benefit of guaranteed income because the government is the one paying the rent. Just some thoughts.
I feel like a lot of times that those are negligent landlords, though.
Yeah. And weirdly, they're talking about that on The Sopranos.
Oh, no. They're talking about a housing scam.
Yeah, a scam.
They buy the property and then basically rob it themselves, launder it through a nonprofit, allow it to fall into disrepair, and then the project never happens and everybody just gets an insurance payout.
Horrible. So it's completely unethical. Yes, thank you for those comments from the Discord. The Discord link will be in the episode description below. I'm going to read one more thing about ADHD budgeting and then Apple reviews and then our patron, and then I'll send you all on your merry way. This is from Kay. Hi, Gabby and Mal. This is in response to the other listener who just can't make a budget work in real life. I recommended a budgeting app called YNAB. You need a budget. While I don't think one app can solve all of a person's money problems, this one has a lot of features the listener was looking for. First, it's an envelope style system, although it's all digital, meaning you have to put your money into categories when you receive it, every time you receive money. I like this better than having a lot of accounts. It basically creates the appearance of lots of accounts without having to deal with a bunch of different banks or cards. It also forces you to think about the money you have rather than the money categories and goals in the abstract, if that makes sense. I always struggled with budgeting systems that make you create arbitrary feeling limits on spending categories as a starting point, and this feels less arbitrary to me. Next, it's 100% customizable for both categories and goals. You can make it look exactly how you want and set different kinds of goals, monthly, by a certain date, etc. Finally, YNAB offers training and customer service support, so you can ask questions about how to set your system up for you. You can see their customer service and training options on their website. It is a paid app, but I think they offer a free trial. I recommend checking it out because it's the only budgeting system I've ever been able to stick to. I hope that's helpful, and good luck to my fellow ADHD budget attempters. All the best, Kay.
YNAB?
YNAB. You need a budget, which next week we'll get into. A couple other people recommended it too. It seems to be very popular with the ADHD community.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I must have missed it at the community meeting. I wasn't paying attention though.
Oh my God. Easiest joke in the book.
Oh okay. Yeah. Then why didn't you think of it first?
Okay, now I'm going to read three Apple reviews. This one is from Dr. LS437. Loving these conversations. Love the new cover art. As someone who loves personal finance podcasts, I'm really digging this unique perspective in the scene. Gabby challenges their guests and pushes for real info. I like their sense of humor and voice. Thank you for putting it out there. This is from JessPlease42. The most important money podcast around. I love the blend of money and social issues that Gabby tackles. Gabby rules. And then this is from Oh Lady Samantha. Love this show. Longtime listener and reader and watcher of everything Gabby does. Love the addition of Mal and their perspectives on money. This show makes me think differently about money and has made me feel seen when it comes to money trauma and insecurities. These are all 5 stars.
It would be really funny if it was like 1 star. I love it.
1 star. We got one bad review, which is very funny. It was like, great podcast, intolerable host. Maybe I'll read it next week.
I think that should be your new bio.
Right? Okay, and thank you to Kiki, who became a patron this week. You can become a patron at patreon.com/GabbyDunn. If you want to write in, okay, we have two listener episodes coming up. One is one about medical testing and selling your body to science. Please write in with any stories about that that you have. And a second episode idea that we're toying with is costs of transitioning. So if you have any stories about that, please write those in. I would love to hear from you. Be sure to send an email at gabbyisbadwithmoney@gmail.com or leave me a voicemail at 844-474-4040. You can also email me a voice memo if you prefer. Join our online communities too. We're on Instagram, Discord, TikTok, Patreon, and Facebook. Links to all of these will be listed in the episode description. Don't forget to listen to the show the day it drops so we can get on the charts and spread the word. Also leave a 5-star Apple review and I'll read it on the show. Do you have anything you want to say, Mal?
This week, follow me at Mal Blum on TikTok, and I will leave you with the thought, ask not whether or not you should bury your pet. Ask how much this gonna cost me.
Thank you so much. Bye.